Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferentz.
Biden's pick for labor secretary, the mayor of Boston, and the former head of the local building trades. More unions condemning Trump. And today on the show, Jimmy Cullen, editor of the Progressive Populous, our labor lawyer, Joyce Goldstein, and Senator Sherrod Brown. Good afternoon and welcome to the Friday, January 8th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. And when you get an opportunity, do this. Just sign up, get our shows on a regular basis, and eventually give us a rating, and we'd appreciate a five-star rating. And boy, I tell you, we've got some five-star guests today. We're going to kick things off in a few minutes with Jimmy Cullen, editor of the Progressive Populous, which has been around since 1995. As a forum for news and commentary. And, of course, with what happened 2 days ago in Washington, that is going to be his commentary. He writes, some, but not all, Republicans have distanced themselves from Donald Trump after he sent his supporters to storm the Capitol in a last-ditch effort to stop the certification of Joe Biden's victory in the presidential election. The insurrection failed, but don't be fooled. The fascist turn of the Republican Party started back in the 1970s under Richard Nixon, and it matured under Ronald Reagan, who undermined confidence in the news media and labor unions, which provided much of the organizational and fundraising resources for the Democratic Party. And Jimmy points out, because of that relationship, which faded away over the years, the Democrats had no choice but to get backed by corporate interests. That's why you have not seen labor law reform for such a long time in America. Think about the National Labor Relations Act, going back to the Great Depression, FDR days. We haven't seen any improvements on that since. In fact, it's just been whittled away. So Jimmy's going to be our first guest, and we'll have that labor component. You know, some writers are saying it goes beyond that. Harold Meyerson of the American Prospect writes that the creation of the modern Republican Party is 1964, when LBJ lobbied for and got the Civil Rights Act passed. And he had to cozy up to Democrats. They called them the Dixiecrats in the South. And that started a cascade downward because they did not want to come on board with that. And it's been a spiral downward since. So we'll mix it all up with Jimmy Cullen as our first guest. Joyce Goldstein, our labor lawyer, who's been with us about a year now. And she's, of course, with Joyce Goldstein and Associates, 216-771-6633. Founded in 1986, her firm has vast experience in labor and employment law, employee benefits, and litigation. There's two things she's going to get into. Number one is Energy Harbor. Energy Harbor is the company overseeing the Perry Nuclear Power Plant. I believe they also oversee Davis-Besse. Well, the Utility Workers Union of America, we're talking about Local 270, is in the process of seeking arbitration with Energy Harbor after the company notified the union that starting now, January 1, it began, it would no longer pay into about 30 plant workers' health coverage at the same rate it did when it was part of First Energy Corporation. What this amounts to for single employees, single coverage, is about $730 a year. Something like $61 per month more. For those with families, we're talking $168 more per month. That's more per month. So that's an added cost of $2,000 a year. Joyce says the greed never stops with Energy Harbor. And she's going to explain how Energy Harbor was able to do this. And They have a collective bargaining agreement. Keep that in mind. We'll also get into the dispute, and this hopefully is going to be overturned with the Biden administration. And this has to do with challenges to union elections. And there's been a number of lawsuits on this, many of them brought forth by the AFL-CIO. And what essentially this is all about is delaying the election process. It's the old line, justice delayed is justice denied. And the Trump administration has done everything possible to put unions at a distance. And this is just another good example. There's so many things that happen, and hopefully Biden can overturn them as quickly as possible, I might add. Then our last guest is going to be Senator Sherrod Brown. We were supposed to have him yesterday, but because of the events in Washington on Wednesday, he could not join us. He has plenty to say. He came out yesterday claiming that the 25th Amendment should be enacted. That's the amendment that would pretty much kick Donald Trump out of the White House. Now, at last report, Vice President Mike Pence is not in favor of that, and they would need a majority of people. That's really not going to happen. There's, what, 12 days left of this administration? So we'll touch on that and talk about securing additional COVID-19 relief and delivering results for workers in the state of Ohio and around the country. The senator says he's going to work with the Biden administration to deliver results where Wall Street and corporate CEOs have failed, working to protect workers on the job, raise the minimum wage, enact a paid family leave plan, and crack down on the exploitive independent contractor business model. I've been saying this on the show for years. Many employers don't want employees as we know it, where you have a job, you go in every day, and you get health care, you get benefits, you get vacation time. You're getting away from that. Independent contractors, they will pay you for a specific job. And if you have to buy a truck, you buy a truck. Whatever you need to do that job, you have to purchase it. You have to pay your taxes. You have to pay into Social Security. And you know some people are fudging that. So, once again, the Trump administration made some changes. We talked about this on the show a couple days ago. And again, hopefully the new administration will, with people like Sherrod Brown in place, will be able to turn that around. So he'll be our last guest. Well, I've got some good news here. We have a appointee, the next person to head the U.S. Labor Department. And that person is Marty Walsh. Marty is the current mayor of the city of Boston and the former head of the building trades. And I got a comment here from the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health. We've referenced this organization many times on the show, better known as National COSH. And they congratulated Marty to be the president-elect's choice to become the next secretary of the Labor Department. Marcy Goldstein-Gelb, co-director of National COSH and former director of the Massachusetts Coalition for Occupational Safety and Health, said Marty worked closely with us, as well as a number of labor unions and community groups, to protect workers and make jobs safer in Boston and Massachusetts. As a state rep, he had efforts to ban hazardous combustible chemicals, which were causing fires and killing workers. As mayor of Boston, he worked with labor unions and safety advocates to pass a new ordinance holding city contractors accountable after the tragic and preventable drowning of two workers in a construction trench. She went on to say, as a lifelong trade unionist who knows firsthand the importance of job safety, Mayor Walsh will urgently need to put his experience to work and confront one of the most crucial tasks of the new administration, and that is protecting workers from the risks of a deadly virus. And we know what that is all about. So Marty Walsh is Biden's pick for the Department of Labor. Long time coming there. What a change that's going to be from the current guy, Eugene Scalia. Wow. Well, I've said this on the show many, many times. When Virginia Fox does not like somebody, we in labor have to jump up and down. I mean, really jump up and down. Virginia Fox, she is, of course, a Republican out of North Carolina, and she hates unions. Oh, my God, does she hate unions. I've had many conversations with Bill Samuel, Labor Federation, talking about her her record. And when she found out that Marty Walsh was going to be Labor Secretary, she issued this comment. Listen, House Democrats have consistently proven their commitment to special interests like big labor bosses and trial lawyers in advancing radical policies that hurt workers and job creators alike. Marty Walsh's background in organized labor signals he will work to deliver on left-wing campaign promises, including a $15 mandated minimum wage. How horrible that is. Punitive one-size-fits-all regulations. How about this one? Forced unionization of small businesses. And eliminating the independent contractor model, among many others. I like that one. Forced unionization. I guess she doesn't know they vote. Anyway, there's more here. I have serious concerns that the Department of Labor under Walsh will crush our economic recovery by strangling business owners with an onslaught of job-killing regulations and vindictive and overzealous oversight. America's families, workers, and small businesses deserve better. Once again, Representative Virginia Fox, and she is the leader, Republican leader, on the Committee on Education and Labor. Please just go in the corner, Virginia, and stay there. All right, we're getting more comments from those in labor about what happened 2 days ago on January 6th. What an incredible day, a dark day in American history. Rich Trumka of the AFL-CIO and the National Nurses were the first to speak out. Bonnie Castillo is executive director of NNU, and she declared Trump is liable for inciting the insurrection. This is what she said. He's been encouraging sedition. No one is above the law. He's responsible for the scenes we have seen at the Capitol, and he should be held accountable. And Trumka said in a statement, we're witnessing one of the greatest assaults on our democracy since the Civil War. This attempted coup has been years in the making as Donald Trump consistently spews venom, conspiracies, hate, and lies to his supporters. Randy Weingarten is head of the American Federation of Teachers. She said Trump has enabled rioters who stormed the U.S. Capitol and threatened the lives of duly elected officials. Make no bones about it. It's domestic terrorism. It's reprehensible. Then we have John Costa. John's the head of the Amalgamated Transit Union. He said January 6th is a dark and devastating day in our country's history. What was supposed to be a routine procedure to follow the Constitution and certify the democratically decided election turned into a violent siege on the U.S. Capitol and the foundations of our democracy. Everett Kelly is president of the American Federation of Government Employees. And he said Trump encouraged a mob of anti-democracy protesters to breach the security perimeter of the Capitol, forced a lockdown, and endangering the safety of members of Congress, workers at the Capitol, innocent civilians who live nearby, and the law enforcement officials charged with keeping the peace. And get this, there are about 50 people arrested for breaking the curfew, which came after the Capitol was cleared and police recovered and disarmed pipe bombs, a number of Molotov cocktails, I think 11 of them. 42 were arrested on other charges. Some of them were drug charges. By contrast, about 300 peaceful racial justice protesters, almost all of them black, were arrested in D.C. after a demonstration last summer. And more force was used in that infamous law enforcement clearance of Lafayette Square for Trump's photo op. Remember that when he held up the Bible? Well, all this has prompted a comment by the head of the Service Employees Union, and that's Mary Kay Henry. She said the contrast between police non-reaction to white nationalists versus massive crackdowns on Black Lives Matter activists is not right. This attack on the Capitol provoked by Trump is about wielding the power of whiteness to threaten what we hold dear. The chance for families of every race to thrive, to have jobs and health care, for our kids to be safe, and to have clean air to breathe. I'm thinking of Black and brown families waiting for their loved ones to come home. Those families were watching the news of armed white supremacists in the Capitol taking selfies with Capitol Police when peaceful Black Lives Matter protesters were met with tanks, tear gas, and rubber bullets. Mary Kay Henry, President, Service Employees Union. All right, we have to break. You're listening to America's Workforce. Jimmy Cullen, editor of the Progressive Populist, coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number one. Welcome one of our regulars, Jimmy Cullen, editor of the Progressive Populist, twice monthly magazine of politics, economics, and general news for workers. You can get a free sample after this show, mind you, by calling this number, 1-800-205-7067, or check out the website, populist.com, populist.com. Well, with the events of this week, of course, Jimmy is going to talk about Wednesday, January 6th. Some are calling it a day of infamy. That may be going a little too far, but the bottom line is it was a part of history we want to forget, but we never will forget. There's no doubt about that. Jimmy, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks. It's good to be back.
So I guess some Republicans are now distancing themselves from Trump. We'll see what happens here, but I'm going to let you go ahead here, because you've got some interesting observations. What happened this week had some seeds planted many, many years ago. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Yeah, after Trump sent his supporters to storm the Capitol in a last-ditch effort to stop the certification of Joe Biden's victory in the presidential election on January 6th, perhaps was the logical conclusion to Trump's failed presidency. The good news is that the insurrection failed.
Yeah.
The Congress went ahead, and after hours of bickering, went ahead and approved the elector slate that showed Joe Biden and Kamala Harris getting elected. But don't be fooled. The fascist turn of the Republican Party started in the 1970s, really in the 1960s, when after Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act, he told one of his aides, I fear that we've lost the South for a generation. And it's at least that far. Richard Nixon then in 1968 started the Southern strategy of going after the old white supremacists in the South and winning them over to the Republican Party. Lewis Powell had put forward a proposal in 1973 to get big businesses to throw their weight around a little more, and got Lewis Powell named to the Supreme Court, for one thing, but it also started the big business and the billionaires to put their money into the Republican Party and develop think tanks and university professorships. And this matured under Ronald Reagan, who undermined labor unions, which provided much of the organizational and fundraising resources of the Democratic Party. And Reagan's National Labor Relations Board undermined the ability of unions to organize and negotiate contracts with businesses. And, of course, he was notorious after he took office for breaking the Air Traffic Controllers Union.
Right.
And that was the signal to big business that they could bust their unions, too, without any consequences. Then is the FCC did away with the Fairness Doctrine, which required radio and TV stations to broadcast in the public interest. And by 1992, union membership had collapsed to the point where Bill Clinton and the Democrats had to turn to big business and wealthy donors to fund their campaigns. Organized labor started feeling left out of the plan. And then the loss of good union jobs also left a generation of America's working people looking for someone to blame. And the
right.
Republicans were ready to step in and blame the Democrats for the loss of good blue-collar jobs. And they also blamed blacks and Latinos and women and gays and everybody else that Republicans could split off and vilify. So then Trump stepped in the 2016, and he raised it to an art. Didn't really add anything to the blue collar workers. He said he was going to work for them, but he didn't do any more than the Obama administration had done putting the economy back in good shape. And they rode that through the 2020, and then COVID caused everything to fall apart. So the Republicans have been heading towards fascism for now 40 to 50 years, and it's time for America to realize that. And even now that the insurrection didn't prevent Joe Biden's election from being certified, and the popular backlash has got Republicans claiming that Antifa were behind the storming of the Capitol. But remember that Trump literally gave the maggots their marching orders on last Wednesday, telling them that, you know, we're going to march to the Capitol, and I'll be there with you. So
yeah.
They started marching. Of course, Trump went back to the White House and watched it on TV. But it's no coincidence that Republicans consider anti-fascists their enemies. And the Republican Party needs to now purge these fascists and their enablers, including those Republican members of Congress who made the baseless challenge against Biden's election from the GOP. You know, they've ever since the election, they've been whining that Biden somehow cheated to win the election. And the whole party has participated in that, causing people to doubt the integrity of the election.
Yeah.
And, you know, now we're going to have to rebuild that. And people, you know, half the, a poll just yesterday showed that 45% of Republicans approved of the storming of the Capitol. Thought it was a good thing.
Wow, that's sad.
Yeah, like I said, the good news is the insurrection failed for now,
mm-hmm.
but the cracks are there, and it has given a blueprint on how easy it would be to attack the Capitol. As one commentator said, you can bet that the ISIS has taken note of that, and other opponents of the United States, and it is terrible that the Capitol Police were not at all ready for this, even though the Proud Boys and the Trump supporters had been talking on Twitter and Parler, the social media, about how they were going to go to Washington and really crack heads on January 6th, but apparently nobody paid attention.
Yeah. It's it was completely ignored, and I'm sure it's going to be one for investigation once the Democrats take over. Jimmy, we're going to have to run here. We got three guests on the show today, and I appreciate your commentary here. Jimmy Cullen, editor of the Progressive Populist, populist.com, for more information. The crazy thing about it, Trump's going around, along with the supporters, saying that the election was stolen, whereas he tried to steal the election by telling Mike Pence not to continue the vote that happened on January 6th, actually January 7th, because it was so late. All right, we're going to have to take a break. You take care. We'll talk to you next month, all right?
Yeah, literally everything they accuse the Democrats of, they have been trying to do themselves.
That's right. All right, Jimmy Cullen on our live line. We're going to take a quick break. Joyce Goldstein, our labor lawyer, coming up next. Once again, you're listening to America's Workforce.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you are exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
This is America's Workforce.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. And by the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find them online at oft-aft.org. Let's go to line number two. Welcome a dear friend, Joyce Goldstein, top labor lawyer, Joyce Goldstein and Associates. The website is joycegoldsteinlaw.com, and she's here to talk about some organization that she's very, very familiar with, Energy Harbor. And I guess this is formerly, First Energy, and there's been a bankruptcy. This utility has gone through all kind of changes here, and they're under the microscope because of some legislation that led to an FBI raid. Boy, I tell you, there's all kind of components here, but she's going to focus on the Utility Workers Union of America Local 270, who are getting screwed on their health care coverage. Hey, Joyce, welcome back to the show. Hey. And Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you. Happy to be back.
So you've been involved in this for quite some time, and I'd like to get your point of view, because you here's an organization. Well, I'm talking about a union here. Local 270 had a CBA, a collective bargaining agreement, and you think once you have an agreement, everything is good here. But there's a lot into this. Why don't you explain what's going on here, Joyce?
Sure. Well, of course, there's a very long explanation here and then a much shorter one. The longer version includes the fact that this company that's now known as Energy Harbor used to be First Energy Solutions, that was a wholly owned subsidiary of First Energy Corporation, which is a giant utility here in Ohio and in other states. And a number of years ago now, First Energy Corp, the parent, spun off First Energy Solutions and essentially pushed it into bankruptcy. And that entity, First Energy Solutions, now goes by the name of Energy Harbor as it came out of bankruptcy.
Joyce, my head is already spinning on all the different components on this.
Right.
Okay, right. Go ahead.
There's so much. Yeah, no, there's so much. And well, for our purposes now, what we're concerned with is Energy Harbor. And Energy Harbor, again, coming out of the bankruptcy, owns the Perry Nuclear Power Plant here in Ohio. And that was a plant that had previously been owned and operated by First Energy Corp in another manner. So now it's Energy Harbor. And the way that it got itself out of bankruptcy was by agreeing that it would maintain all of the wages and benefits and completely assume the union's collective bargaining agreement. As you said, the union there is Utility Workers Union of America, Local 270. And Local 270's had a longstanding relationship and representing the employees at that plant through the different iterations of who's owned it. But as I say, now it's owned by Energy Harbor. And in order for Energy Harbor to have emerged from bankruptcy, they had to commit to the bankruptcy court, to the union, that they would fully assume the collective bargaining agreement that had been in place and wouldn't make any changes in wages and benefits to the employees there. So that's what brings us to the current situation. And now that's no longer the case. In mid-December, the company announced that they were going to be making changes and they were not going to be fully paying the health insurance that they're obligated to pay under the collective bargaining agreement that they assumed through the bankruptcy. So, I could go into greater detail about how their health insurance system works, but really the bottom line of the whole thing is that they're just not paying what they're obligated to pay. And they took a while to tell the union that they weren't going to pay it. They didn't let the union know until the middle of December that they weren't going to be paying for the premiums that go into effect January 1. So right now it's already upon us. And on essentially no notice, they said that they were going to not fully compensate the employees. So they're, in effect, what they're doing is they're just passing more of the cost of the health insurance on to the employees, which, you know, for them, for Energy Harbor, it's a drop in the bucket, especially as they're looking to get over $1 billion in subsidies from ratepayers in Ohio. And when they got that commitment under HB6 to get all this money, they repeatedly told the state legislature and the public at large that one of the important reasons why they needed this money was to continue to operate the plant and the nuclear power plants generally, both of them here in Ohio, Perry and Davis-Bessie, and that they would continue to maintain good, high-quality union jobs with the same wages and benefits that they had had.
Mm-hmm.
So despite the fact that was the promise that they repeatedly made that then got them a legislative commitment to over $1 billion in subsidies. Now they're looking to nickel and dime their employees. And of course, it's not nickels and dimes to the employees. To them, it's a lot of money, even though it's not that to obviously this company that's got so much. And I mean, really, it's just nothing short of greed. There's no other way to say it. I mean, their greed knows no end. And so that's what's going on here, is they have cut the insurance. The union has filed grievances, filed a grievance, asked the company to immediately go to arbitration over it. The company didn't even have the courtesy of responding for weeks during this time, during the holidays. The union sent multiple emails saying, let's just expedite the grievance procedure. Let's get to the end of this. Let's get to arbitration. Let's resolve this. And it honestly wasn't until yesterday, January 7th, so it was about a month later, that the company finally called and communicated with the union and agreed to have a meeting to begin to discuss what they've been doing. So they've been dragging their feet on the grievance, and it's outrageous. It's outrageous because of, as they say, they've made so many promises to the state of Ohio about these jobs, and then to turn around and when I guess they think nobody's looking to just cut their health insurance, it's really outrageous.
Yeah, it's so unfortunate, especially when they got all the subsidies, as you mentioned. So, Joyce, let me ask you this. This started January 1, so the workers are paying more for their coverage. And I'm seeing $168.78 more per month for those who have families. That translates to like $2,000 a year. That's more than what they're paying right now. And I'm sure they're paying a good chunk to begin with. When this is resolved, eventually it's going to be resolved, will they be able to get that money back? How does this work?
Yes, if those employees are paying the difference now, and it's not entirely clear as we speak because we have not been yet seen what the pay stubs are looking like from the employees there. So I'm not sure exactly, you know, when the additional payments are hitting, or if in fact, you know, maybe because the grievance is pending, maybe the company has withheld making the cuts, because we don't really know, because it's too early in the year to have looked at people's pay stubs to see, and because companies aren't been talking to us, to see exactly how they're implementing it. But if indeed the company is withholding that additional amount of money from people's paychecks to cover the insurance, we will definitely be seeking an arbitration to get all of that money back so that everyone is made whole. And hopefully, of course, in this, no one loses their insurance by failing to be able to pay those additional amounts.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's definitely one to watch. All right, let's move on to the election process. And you and I have had many, many chats over the last year about what has happened to the National Labor Relations Board and how we've seen so many decisions, especially under the Obama administration, that were reversed. And I can only assume because they were so draconian, so anti-worker, that with the incoming administration, a lot of that is going to be reversed. One of them that I want to talk about is this union election process. Maybe you can explain what's going on here, because I know the AFL-CIO has, I guess they brought two lawsuits dealing with this situation. I'm sure there's even more that I'm not aware of, but this is a case, I guess, justice delayed is justice denied, and you want to get an election going, you want to represent the workers, but they're dragging it out, right? Can you give us some details on that?
Sure. There are currently, with respect to what you're raising, two different lawsuits that were filed by the AFL-CIO that were challenging two rules that were initiated by the National Labor Relations Board regarding union representation elections. And both of those cases are currently pending at the D.C. Circuit Court. The first one of those that's at issue slows down the union election process. So the way that works is that if a union files for an election, that they say that they represent a majority of the employees in a bargaining unit, and they file a petition with 30% or more of the signatures of the people in the bargaining unit. An employer can challenge that petition. And one of the main ways that they challenge that petition is they say that there are people who are either included or excluded from the bargaining unit in the way that the union described it. So either more people or less people should be entitled to vote. And usually that's a calculation that an employer will make based on which they think they'll have a greater chance of winning an election. Sometimes it's by diluting the group by putting in more people who they think ought to be there who are going to be no votes for the union, or maybe having fewer people there because of that. So employers will make a calculation about, and of course unions do make a calculation about who do they want in the unit. But employers are typically looking at that from the perspective of who they could keep out. Well, what had happened with the Obama board was they, first of all, they gave more weight to who the union petitioned for. And now the Trump board gives less weight to who the union petitioned for and more weight to who the employer wants in there.
Uh-huh.
But the process of it was, you know, there were a lot of things that they would go ahead and have an election anyway with what might have been a disputed unit in one way or another. Maybe it included supervisors who arguably shouldn't have voted or that sort of thing. They would go ahead and have the vote, and there would be challenge ballots that would be set aside, and there would be objections to the process that could come later. And instead of screwing around and having lots of litigation and hearings and delays before there was an election, giving the employer the opportunity to run an anti-union campaign, under the Obama board, the idea was, let's hurry up, let's get the election while this is still a hot and live issue and nobody's been afraid and scared off about it. Let's have the election and we can litigate these issues afterwards. So that was one of the rules that was involved here, is whether the employer should be able to slow down the process because of their challenges.
All right. Well, that's one of them, and I'm sure this is one to watch, especially with the Biden administration coming in. Joyce, we're just about out of time. Your buddy Sherrod Brown is on line number 3, so I got to check in with him, and we'll check in with you in 1 month. How's that sound?
All right. That sounds good. Shout out to Sherrod Brown, the best senator in the country.
Amen to that. Joyce Goldstein and Associates, the number is 216-771-6633, and you can find her online at joycegoldsteinlaw.com. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Senator Sherrod Brown right here on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this next segment brought to you by the North Coast Labor Federation.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And welcome back to America's Workforce. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. And you can follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number 3. Welcome back to the show. We were supposed to have him yesterday, but because of what happened in Washington on Wednesday, wow. Senator Sherrod Brown joining us. Senator, welcome back to the show, and how are you today? These are some scary moments for you and so many in our Congress, and what a dark day for American history. Are you okay? How you feeling?
Yeah, I'm fine. I didn't feel particularly traumatized or afraid during this, but I worry for this country that that the president, even Republicans acknowledged that day the president's rhetoric and stoking the fires and continuing to say that the election was fraudulent, and a third of the country still believes the election is rigged, and he keeps doing this, and his rhetoric caused the death of his speeches, and the way he's done things has caused the death of at least four or five people now in this riot at the Capitol. And that's why I'm not so much looking back to punish is the reason I'm for invoking the 25th Amendment, asking the cabinet and the vice president to remove him. Never before happened in this country. I'm concerned about the next 10 or so days until Biden's sworn in. That's my reason for calling for invoking the 25th Amendment.
Representative Cori Bush introduced a resolution, I believe it was 2 days ago, saying that Congress must investigate and expel any member who incited the insurrectionist terrorists who invaded the People's House on Wednesday. And some are saying that they need to go. I mean, there were plenty of them. What, 140 members of Congress and at least a dozen senators? What's your thoughts on that?
Their behavior is despicable, but Congress is not going to expel that many members. I just think we need to speak with a strong moral voice. We need the few Republicans who have stood up to the president, and that's almost none, but we need to call on them to do better than they've done. But those who did that, they don't deserve to be members of Congress. They were elected. I don't believe, though, that Congress is going to even consider expelling them. I mean, I want to move forward, and I want to get the new president sworn in. I want to make sure that we can move this country in the right way. I don't want to look back more than we have to fix things. Pass the minimum wage, pass the PRO Act, get the $2,000 a person checks out the door, do all the things that we need to do as a country to bring this country back, and most importantly, dealing with the pandemic.
I think your dog is a little hungry or either distracted right now.
Well, there's two of them, and they're fighting a little bit over breakfast. It's a long story.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. That's all right. I love talking to you, and it just makes it more real. That's all. Yeah, let's talk about moving forward. And you probably heard the news that Marty Walsh, the mayor of Boston and former head of the building trades over there in New England, is going to be the labor secretary. And I'm thinking, boy, a union guy in the Labor Department. We also have a union guy in the Department of Education. Sounds good to me. You got to be pretty excited about this.
Well, and you make the contrast between this Secretary of Labor and the last Secretary of Labor, the Secretary of Labor who, Scalia, the guy that's about to leave office, worked for corporations, made millions of dollars in his career fighting unions, trying to decertify unions, trying to keep unions out of the workplace, trying to squeeze workers. And now we have our Secretary of Labor. I mean, that's really what this election is all about. I mean, Biden was the most pro-worker candidate in a generation, as we've said on the show. And this Secretary of Labor is going to move forward on the PRO Act and on minimum wage and on the overtime rule and on all the things that put the government on the side of workers for a change.
Well, talk to me about the agenda. You mentioned the minimum wage. Let's start there. The minimum wage has not gone up, I want to say, like 12 years now, which is ridiculous. It's still $7.25 an hour.
Yeah.
Is that on the agenda? And you mentioned the PRO Act, too, which is to protect the right to organize. This is the biggest labor law reform since FDR. How do you feel about those two issues moving forward?
Well, I think we have a real shot at getting this to happen. I mean, I believe every Senate Democrat has been publicly supportive of the PRO Act. We have a problem of Republicans will still try to block it, and we have a majority, but we don't have the 60 votes. But I think we figure out how to do it. The whole labor agenda is really important to a lot of us in the Democratic caucus, and we're going to figure it out. I mean, that was my commitment during this presidential campaign. I wasn't on the ballot this year, but it was my commitment campaigning with Biden and for Biden. And I want to see a whole worker agenda putting the dignity of work first. And Biden talked about the dignity of work. The new senator from Georgia, Reverend Warnock, in his acceptance speech, talked about the dignity of work. Dignity of work, the term dignity of work essentially came out of the civil rights movement with Dr. King at the church where Reverend Warnock is the pastor. So we know how important this is.
No doubt about that. The other important issue is infrastructure. And we have a lot of the building trades on the show, and I know you're very close friends with them. And, of course, the head of the Labor Department comes from the building trades. I can't think of a better way. I mean, we've got, 20 million people out of work in America right now. I can't think of a better way to really dig into this issue and get something going. I mean, we didn't raise the gas tax in, 25 years. I mean, there's a lot of things that need to be done. We're way behind when you compare us to other free countries. I'm just wondering, can we get this going under the Biden administration?
Yeah, there's no better way to put people back to work. I mean, the most important way to put people back to work is get the coronavirus in the rearview mirror, is get the vaccines out. We have to do all that. But the second best way after that, and after that should be, right after that should be, you know, March, April, May, whenever we can put this together, is do a major infrastructure bill. And when you say infrastructure, it's not just, you know, it's not just water, sewer, highways, bridges. It's also broadband, it's housing, it's all the things that make our country richer if you have the kind of foundation. And it puts literally millions of people to work, not just in the building trades and the good union jobs that pay well with good benefits and where the work is, you know, with prevailing wage and Davis-Bacon, the work is done so well and so efficiently. But you also are putting all kinds of manufacturing workers out there, everything to build the kind of infrastructure. And one of the things we've learned in this pandemic, the great revealer, is what the lack of broadband for a lot of communities, whether it's people in underserved areas and cities, whether it's rural areas, the way that Roosevelt did electrification, we should do the same with broadband, and it will show people everywhere that the role of government is so important.
Now, because there's a majority, it's going to be a majority in the Senate, doesn't that change the committees around? What did I hear? You're going to be involved in a new committee coming up?
Yeah, I will become the chairman of the Senate Banking Housing Committee, which is ideal in a lot of ways. I think that one is that I will be working with Congresswoman Fudge, the new secretary. She will be the new secretary of Housing and Urban Development. And the Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs Committee especially will focus on housing. And that's what we were just talking about with infrastructure and what we were just, you know, what we can do to create jobs and create and build accessible, affordable housing for people in this country.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, Senator, you got to feel good about the future. It's so unfortunate as to what happened 2 days ago in our nation's capital. It's definitely a one that's going to live with us for generations, if not centuries. But you got to move forward. You got to look forward. We're going to have control of the House as well as the Senate. And only better times can be before us. So congratulations on all that. The only down part is we lost Lindor and Carrasco. Yay. What's going to happen to the Indians now?
Well, Flash and I were talking before the show that how upset we would be about that trade, and then I am and he is. But considering the events of the week where there was a failed coup d'etat against the United States of America, where there was riots in the Capitol, the trade seems a little less important. But I still can't believe the Indians have the best player of our lifetimes, and instead of building around him, you know, that they trade him. I understand the finances of it, but have Ramirez and Lindor in the same infield. But that's the decision management made, and they own the team, and Flash and I don't.
Senator, thank you. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk to you next month, all right?
Of course. Sorry for the distraction of the dogs in the interview today. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Right, you seem to have calmed them down. That's okay, Senator Sherrod Brown. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO and the Office of the Ohio Consumer Council. Until then, all of you, have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.